Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. This is your captain speaking. And my partner in crime, Andrew Goode, is going to be back next week, we think, we hope. But today we've got something very special lined up. Biggs in the studio again. How are you, Biggs?
Very good, Jim. Very good.
Good.
That's not what's special about today, though, I don't think, is it?
No, we've got producer Rob as well.
Yeah.
Go on, you say our special, Rob. Go on. I think you deserve the floor. Let's do it right. So we've got Biggs in, very special. We've got producer Rob in, special. We've got me in, specialish.
Sort of special, yeah.
What's happening? Come on, Rob.
Oh, we've got two big blokes in, haven't we?
Very big blokes.
Big men, big reputations, and big medal collections as well. Do you like that?
Who is it then?
Go on. We've got Eben Etterbeth and Vincent Cock coming in the studio.
We bloody well have.
What a show.
It's going to be absolutely awesome. And we're going to be covering a bit of the Prem and the URC. So settle back, enjoy. You know the script. Make sure you're subscribed on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. Tis crunchy yet soft. Tis filling yet has a hole. Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's. Huzzah! A toast to breakfast.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Right, before we get our guests in, how are we? Biggs, you good?
Very good. I had a very pleasant EasyJet experience this morning, which isn't always the case.
No.
When you fly EasyJet, but I'll be honest, the flight took off 15 minutes early and I was 30 minutes ahead
of
schedule from Bordeaux to London Gatwick. So I've been fully commuting this morning.
Yeah.
So it's been a good day. It's been a good day.
Yeah, it's a joy when travel's good. Rob, you? Bus down, you got one of the mega buses down. Didn't you?
Or three quid from Stockton.
You've blown the ankle out, have you?
Yeah. It wasn't a good day on Saturday, lads. Stockton crashing out the cup. My rugby career's in tatters. There was people at the clubhouse laughing at me. It wasn't good.
Rob's texting me after because we're obviously talking him up on the pod. There's a few people in the rugby community game that listen to the pod. Getting ahead of himself, isn't he? Like talking himself up, you know.
He texts me saying this was the last dance after the weekend, so
I did have 12 pints of Guinness when I said that. I was feeling a bit emotional.
Were you texting Biggs when you were drunk and not me?
I did. I sent you a text. You ignored me.
No, you texted me the next day hungover.
He left you on red, didn't he?
Yeah.
He left you on red.
Yeah, I get it. I feel it. I know Biggs is your biggest fan. But anyway, is it the ankle gone?
Yeah, I lasted about 6 minutes in the game. And then as I was sort of staggering across the pitch, walking off, there was a sizable crowd. There was probably about 50 people there watching. And just as I'm staggering across the pitch, I hear someone shout, "Fucking tell them about the podcast, you could."
Hey, they're just keeping you grounded.
Yeah, that's what it was, mate. So, yeah, not a good day. Stockton crashing out the cup, but fair play, Darlington. They deserved it.
Was it Darlington?
Yeah, it was
proper Northern
local rivals. Yeah.
Was it?
Mm.
Oh, well.
But fair play to them.
Yeah, no, I did give the guys in the studio a bit of insight into my lad, didn't I? So I didn't know whether I was going to share it, but I'm going to give him a shout. He don't listen, but
give him a shout out, Jim.
Yeah, JJ, nasty injury. Nasty injury, a dog shot. I'm going to say it. I'm calling him out. Fuck it. A dog shot at school. Double break, tib fib, dislocated ankle, screaming. Poor lad. So we've had a torrid time at home dealing with a teenage upset, thinks his basketball rugby career's over.
Going to take a fair bit of parenting, I'd say, this week, Jim.
It's that. It's the parenting. Like, that is the mode that I've been in. I was going to say stress. That's what I was going to say. An emotional turmoil in the Hamilton household, but it's parenting.
Yep.
Basically. So, JJ, I feel for you, mate. It's a dog shot. He's gutted. But I said to him, there's no better man your dad's a warrior. I said, there's no better man.
He's learning from the best.
I know. I've dislocated my ankle before and it's a horror. Anything you dislocate, even if you dislocate your finger, like because it looks bad, like he's dislocated his ankle and it was close to being a compound fracture, like coming through the skin. I was like, son, it don't get any worse. Breaking your sternum, getting poked in the eye, sore on your thing, and actually your toenail as well. If you get stamped on your toe, that's a hell of an injury. But I said, dislocating your ankle and having a double break, tib and fib, at the age of 13, you ain't going to feel much worse than that ever again.
Things are going to look up for him, I think. Yeah. I think he's got the big one out the way early doors. Clean slate, Yeah. Going for a very, very successful career. Like his dad.
Yeah, well, let's hope it's better than mine. but yeah, he's got a big basketball comp or training thing in Colorado in the summer. So
what was he doing, Jim, playing football?
Well, yeah, he passed the football and then there was like a 5-second delay and then someone came in from the side.
Do we have a name?
I do, but I can't.
Okay, let's keep it.
So it's so funny. So Beck's telling me, right, when I'm in Japan, and we can laugh about it now. So she's telling me, and we're having an argument down the phone. I'm like, what am I meant to do? Like, as in, but she's scared, right? Because she's, you know, it's a 13-year-old boy, dislocated, broke his leg. He's in pieces, like mentally and physically. I'm like, who's the dad? Get me the dad's number.
How big's his dad?
Yeah, and she's like, what are you on about? I'm like, get me the dad's number. So I didn't know what to do. I was like, what do you do? Just start trying to fill in the dad.
He's a street fighter, I think, from Glasgow.
Yes. I hope he is, because I need a war to get rid of the emotional turmoil. But anyway, talking of war and talking of physicality, if I can't sort the lad's dad out, then these two lads certainly will. It's the great, the wonderful Eben Etzebeth and my former teammate, Vincent Cock. Eben, we'll start with you, mate. You've come a long way to be here. That's commitment.
Yeah, it's been a long travel, long day of training, but yeah, nice to see two familiar faces again.
Yeah, no, it's awesome to have you. We were just saying, Eben loves the media stuff, Vinny. He's all over it.
He was buzzing as well, training, couldn't wait to walk on the field. I knew we were going to sit in our traffic, but yeah, like you said, it's always nice seeing you guys, and I'm very proud of you. Lovely studio.
Thank you. It's not all mine.
It just says it's all yours.
Yeah, it's all mine. Yeah.
Vinny, the reason you're on, we want some dirt on Jim from his Saturday.
I've got a lot of that.
Yeah, that's why you're on. We're not actually going to ask any questions. We're just going to let you go and just chuck it all out there.
Please.
What are you doing? There's nothing. I was all right at Saturday's, weren't I?
I'm just glad you recovered from your broken back, you know?
Yeah.
I told him the story.
It's quite amazing that you recovered and walking again and... So last time I saw you, you couldn't bend down, you couldn't run.
I couldn't touch my knees. Evan, that's what warriors do, mate. That's what Scottish warriors, they just got on. They just didn't moan. Basically, Vinny laughing there was how I ended my career at Sarries. Like, an absolute disgrace. Great to have you. Vinny, let's start with you, mate. How is everything? Is it good being home?
Yeah, it's lovely. Family enjoys it, first of all. My wife is back in Durban. She's from Durban as well. So yeah, she's enjoying it. She's a bit closer to her friends, of course, her mom, her dad, her sister and stuff. And then my kids as well, seeing my boy run around, not being on an iPad like he was used to in the UK or in France. But yeah, actually enjoying the outdoor space a little bit more, driving his bike, swimming, comes back from school every day. We have to open up the pool and he swims for an hour and a half, you know, so.
It sounds terrible.
I was just about to say, I moved into the house next near Evan's house, so in Toulon. So Evan's house was pretty spectacular, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. What about you, Eben? How's things, mate? You're back on the grind and there's so much we can talk about, right? I know, so I don't want to bombard you with everything, but after the World Cup, it was absolutely epic. I don't know if you've been watching Chasing the Sun too, but I'm a super fan. I've been watching it. But as in, even me reliving the moments that you went through as players was just crazy. Have you managed to sit back? Yeah. I know, Vinny, you're the same, but I mean, he features quite a lot in it.
You just like it because you were on the show.
I was on it for about 3 seconds. I did 4 hours of filming. So how are you?
No, it's been great. Obviously, off the World Cup, we had about 2 weeks to take everything in, and then we started the Sharks again, so there wasn't much downtime. But like you said, watching Chasing the Sun again, I think most of those memories comes back to you, and geez, all that stress with those last three games, winning by 1 point, was incredible reliving that again. But no, otherwise good. Like Vinny said, life is good in Durban. Winter almost approaching South Africa, but there's never winter in Durban, so always great weather. Obviously, A little one is now 3 months old. Great to be a dad. Probably my biggest achievement of my life. So that's
hardest,
been incredible.
Hardest or
yes,
not?
Yes, hardest as well.
That's why they wanted to stay in London for a week. 3 month old in the house. He's a smart man.
I was just on that. I love that. How like you can win a World Cup, you can be fighting whoever, be one of the best in the business, but having a child, that's the leveler, right? That's the emotional one that will push your buttons, right, Eben?
Yeah, I think all the dads always tell me, you can't explain until you hold that little one in your hands for the first time, and you know that feeling. I mean, missing them now, it's been a week, so yeah, one more week and I'm back with the family.
Yeah, awesome.
I know you said that it's been tough after the World Cup and you've got obviously a big game this weekend, but the season sort of coming to a close. How do you guys keep motivated, I suppose, for coming back off back-to-back World Cups, going into the Rugby Championship, won it all, been there, done it 100 times? I suppose, what's the motivation moving forward now, considering you've just gone back-to-back World Cups?
Yeah, I think for us, after 2019, we didn't really get a chance to play on home soil. We didn't play any test match in 2020 because of COVID. So now it's the first year actually after the World Cup we can go back, play 6 test matches in front of home fans, and obviously they are very excited. I think big drive for us will be to take the World Cup success into, because to be honest, between World Cups we haven't won all the test matches. We haven't been as successful as we wanted to be. So I think we would like to change that, be successful this year in the test matches. And there's obviously some massive ones coming up. So it's going to be a massive challenge for us. For me personally, just pulling on that Springbok jersey, I mean, we're all internationals in this room. And you guys would know playing for your country is the biggest honor you can have. And even after winning 2 World Cups, to just get another test match under my belt, that's my motivation, and that's what drives me.
Yeah, like with that as well, Vinny, I've been fueling the fire a little bit, but like in a good way. Like I've always spoke highly of South African rugby. Not until I've seen, and excuse the language here, the data points of interest in South Africa, both online, social media, the stuff that we're doing at Rugby Pass, Rugby Pass TV, the subscriptions and stuff. Football is tribal in the UK, and you've played here, and you know that as well. But rugby in South Africa is just, it's life, isn't it? That, and I imagine winning the World Cup, you've gone home, like it's mental, the engagement, right, into the game.
Yeah, of course. The thing is, as a rugby player, you grow up with rugby, you know, sit with your dad as a kid watching it. So I think that's how everyone grows up, is if you're born, you watch rugby kind of thing, you know. And for us, that is one of the sports that's been quite successful in our country, you know. The thing is, it just brings the country together. The thing is, the last 2 World Cups, we said that is our drive, is to play for the country, for the people in South Africa, and it's been our motivation. But to give back to the people back home that couldn't be at the World Cup, for example, or that is struggling in South Africa, that is for us the motivation to bring hope in the country, and just to put a smile. Like, you can't probably give hope for the full year, but at least if it's one day, then we've done our job. And yeah, that's why I think we love it, because we do it for that reason. And yeah, rugby is massive in South Africa.
Yeah, because on that, I've been chatting to Damien, I'm name dropping here, so I sound like a bit of a knob, but chatting to Damien De Allende in Japan and Peter Steph, it felt like them being in Japan was almost like a bit of a welcome break, because of just how crazy it was after winning the World Cup. You're one of the most recognisable faces anyway, regardless of that. But to go, what's it like? Vinny, you tell me, what's it like for him? Go on.
Hated. Yeah. I can't go anywhere with this guy. Like, I just want to go for a quiet meal. And then,
is it crazy?
We came up with a nice plan. Like, I think I'm going to get that zapper where you can tap your cards. And when everyone wants to take a picture, I'm just going to bring that thing out. I'll be a millionaire in a day, you know?
A multimillionaire.
In pounds.
Take on it, Evan, in a minute. But like, is it crazy? Can you see why someone like Peter Steph and Damien, again, who are recognised, just like yourself, Finney, as well, man. But exactly. Is it crazy?
No, it's mad. After this World Cup, it's just exploded even more, you know. So hanging around with him, especially now being teammates as well in Durban, I can just see it. But it makes me happy, you know. Like, everyone watches rugby in South Africa now. And yeah, to see people running around, shouting his name, asking for photos, although it's sometimes while we're having a meal. Yeah, but I'm lucky I'm who I am, and he can take all that heat, because, yeah, sometimes tough.
Do you enjoy that side of Eben, or is that slightly uncomfortable for you when you're out and about with the family or whatever?
I want you to say you love it. Like, I hope you do.
Yeah, look, I'll definitely miss it one day. But like Vinny said, like, sometimes you do want to have a quiet meal with your family and your wife and your kid. But just to come back and to see the support and the people supporting us. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why a guy like Sia is in France as well. Because, I mean, just to explain to you the difference between the 2 World Cups in 2019, when we got back, it was probably Sia and about 3 or 4 guys who couldn't really move around South Africa without being bothered quite a lot. Like, after this World Cup, it's probably 20 out of the 33 guys that gets bombarded. And it's not just fans, it's obviously they aligning with companies, people want to sponsor them, and obviously it's great in that regard. But I mean, with that comes people, obviously, wherever you go, people want a piece of you. And the guys enjoy it. But I must say, after 2023 World Cup, it's just been times five.
Why do you think it is so much bigger after this World Cup?
I think the support just got more. Obviously, as soon as Sia became captain, more people in South Africa, if I can call it, felt inclusive in the Springbok environment. And obviously, he became captain 2018. A year later, we won the World Cup. So that's 2 years. And I think over the past six years, still leading up to 2023, just more and more people of all cultures like bought in. Obviously, Sia, after 2019 World Cup, he made a big difference in giving back to the community. And I mean, people see that and people support that. And I think that just build everything up. And you have a guy like Oxen and Mapimpi, and like, so all the small children and people in South Africa see a role model, whether it's a farm boy, they see Peter Steph running out there and they think they can achieve that. Or it's a little kid from the township who maybe doesn't think he has a future, but then he looks at a guy like Sia or Mapimpi and he sees, flip, I've got a future. So I think we just, like, everyone felt included and everyone felt like Springboks can make them smile and they can actually have a purpose and they can maybe also make it one day. So I think, everyone just bought into it more and more.
What do they say to you when they come up to you then, Eben? What kind of things?
Well, I don't know if you saw that video after the French game, the Elisabetti video.
No.
So
now go and explain that.
There was a kid, a black kid, watching the game. And when I scored that try, almost at the end, he was shouting up and down, and obviously, he couldn't pronounce it a bit.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And he shouted, Elisabeth, yeah. He was jumping on the couch and running around. And that video in South Africa probably became one of the most viral videos. So 70% of people who doesn't know me in South Africa calls me Elisabeth at the moment. So that's like my second name at the moment. So, I mean, you can ask Vinny everywhere I go, that's not what people call me. Well, they probably say thank you to Ox and Vinny in France for all the scrums, but to me, they just say Elisabetti, and it was actually such a great moment.
Clearly, this team that you guys are in at the minute is a special, is probably an understatement, but what, from a player's point of view, makes it so special that everybody knows what's coming when they play you, but not many teams can stop it, sort of thing?
Yeah, the thing is, didn't come overnight, you know. When Russell and Jock and the coaching staff joined, we said, of course, we needed a culture. We needed the right guys to actually perform, you know. And so it's been a long process. And the thing is, it's actually unbelievable being in that environment where everyone just gets along. We don't have fights on the field, off the field, stuff like that. Everyone buys into the plan. The culture is so strong that everyone is aligned, kind of thing. And the thing is exactly what you said. Like every team that analyzes Springboks know exactly what are going to come. But I think we just always try to deliver what we can do, you know, like our best on the day. So we know we've got a good scrum and teams are going to target that. But we want, in our minds, we want to have the best scrum, kind of thing. So we train unbelievably hard to, of course, master those things. And then the thing is just like what Eben said, the different backgrounds we come from, you know, it hasn't always been easy. So the guys are there to fight, you know, till the last minute. Or for us, it's just to never die, you know, never give up kind of attitude we have. And I think that's probably one of our strengths in the team. It's, we all from different backgrounds. None, I would say one or two boys probably went to private schools or whatever, but the rest are all guys who fought their way through the system, who maybe didn't have a chance when they were younger, but then they showed that, like, they're going to write their own story, kind of thing. And for me, this group is just special because of that, you know. I would say that's probably why.
Eben, do you think that why is stronger than perhaps other nations?
Mate, you've not seen Chasing the Sun, have you? Yeah. It tells you about why. This is what I mean.
That's what I mean.
100%, yeah.
That why, because there's so many games which played against you boys, watched obviously the 1-point wins in the quarters, the semis, the final, but so many other games where there's one score games and you boys just come out on the right side. Do you think that why makes that 1-3% difference in the grand scheme of things in big matches?
Yeah, I think like Vincent said, it's where guys come from. And even when I was Chasing the Sun, you probably saw the story about Kirtley.
Mm.
I mean, he went to varsity and he played and didn't get a contract. Then he went to work in a butcher, and he was working in a butcher for, God, I don't know how long, but I know the guy he worked with told him that you'll do great things one day. And Kirtley said he almost gave up, but his grandmother kept on believing him. And now he's a World Cup champion. And each guy has their own story. And Jock also mentioned it during the World Cup and in that documentary, that part of the World Cup, like the script for them was never to probably become a Springbok, because I mean, if you look at where Mampimpi comes from and Sia, and even, I mean, I can name a lot of guys. He wasn't in a big school. I wasn't in a big school. We come from difficult backgrounds and not the best pathways, but we all fought our way to be where we are today. And I think that might have come out in the bigger games. It was never perfect. It was never a runaway game, but we know when it comes to fighting for something, we can get stuck in and keep in it.
What I pick up from the doc and what I love most, having been a player and a player who did enjoy these words that I'm going to throw out now, the violence, the chaos, is that Rassi and Jacques and Eben and Peter Steph and Dwayne, all the lads that speak and see her, they constantly use them phrases. You talk about Eben, what rugby is, and we've gone away from that, I think, globally. But now we look towards the world champions, where you are so comfortable to talk about what it is to win games and use them headline phrases, right?
Yeah, and it's also about getting the right guys. That offload rugby and that running rugby, it's great in a Super Rugby in a URC, but it's not going to win you big championship in test matches. You need a guy, obviously a good kicking game, good set piece, and we are fortunate enough to have those things. And you need a bit of, like you say, a bit of violence and fighting spirit, and guys knowing. We knew what our strengths were. Our strengths were always good kicking game, good defense, set pieces, and yeah, we mix it up in attack a bit. But yeah, we always went back to those things, because we knew in World Cup playoff games, that's are you going to win games? Yes, I remember that game in 2019 against Wales, that semi-final. That was...
I was hoping that one wasn't coming up. Yeah.
That was one of the toughest test matches. And I actually watched that game a couple of weeks ago, and yes, that game was till the end. Like, you couldn't know, because I think the style of play Wales played that day, and it's almost the same like England playing in semi-final last year, almost the same style that we play. And it's just so hard in a knockout game to beat a team that plays that way, because you're always on the front foot, because you put the other team under kicking pressure. They must feel kicks the whole time. And that battle in 2019 was just kick, kick, kick. And it was whoever got bored with the plan, the first who was probably going to lose the game. Mm-hmm.
When people have said, you mentioned it, Jim, about the Springbok way. And then I said, the Springbok way is the winning way.
Mm.
Everybody else should be following that way, because it wins more games of rugby and it wins back-to-back World Cups.
And that's what annoys people, because off the back of that, Vinny, it brings in the scrum, right? And that was the big turning point. And watching you on the dock as well, like you the front row all giggling, you know, it's crazy to think, like, you got the bomber squad there, the physicality, the dark arts of that. But doubling down on the violence, the chaos, and the scrum, the dark arts that you're built for. Like, how proud are you to be part of that group and have such an influence, and such an influence it had, obviously, in the England game, the semi-final? Because effectively, that is what won, obviously not the World Cup, but if you didn't win that game, you wouldn't have been in the final. And that was all based around the scrum. Have you had time to reflect?
Yeah, the thing is, we're actually in a very fortunate position to have very good front rows in South Africa. If you look at the starting or the bench, you can start or bench whoever, you know. So we're very fortunate with that. And for me, being a member of the bomb squad, vice captain probably now.
Self-proclaimed member of the bomb squad. Oh, I love that.
I'm all for that.
Yeah, played 49 games. I think 8 was the start. The thing is, like, we've got a plan where the starters, of course, put poison in the legs and make...
Put what?
Poison.
Oh, love it. Poison in the legs. You like that, Rob? Look at Rob. He's shaking.
The thing is just to wear them out, you know, and for us on the bench, it is the most exciting thing to come on, you know, and just our job is to finish a game and to get penalties when we get on. And I think the game against England when Ox came on and I also later come on, I knew that, listen, I've got one job to do, you know, and for us that was to get dominance in the scrum. Yeah, I mean, scrumming next to a guy like Ox and Bongi, it makes my life easier, you know. It's always nice to be part of a team that focus on that, because we put a lot of emphasis and train quite a lot in that department. And yeah, the thing is, it's nice to see a reward, especially like the last penalty coming off a scrum. It just shows that the hard work pays off.
Yeah, I was going to ask about, like, hard work paying off, unsung heroes, okay? And I don't know who the 20 are that have gone back and that are superstars, but I can kind of imagine. But Dion Free, unbelievable. Him and Quagga Smith, for me, are they unsung or not? Are they at home as rock stars now?
Yeah, I think Dion is probably, I mean, his story is incredible. And watching Chasing the Sun again and seeing, I mean, where he came back from France to come play for, well, first of all, I think, personal opinion, like back then when he was at the Stormers, he was a bit underrated. He was unlucky not to get a Springbok cap in the first place. Obviously, went to France to finish his career and then come back at the Stormers to probably play a couple of matches off the bench and call it quits. But yeah, the Dion Fourie I knew back in 2012 when I started at the Stormers, he was always a fighter. I was not the biggest man in the room, but I mean, he's got some dog in him. He's a real fighter, and making his debut, I think, against you guys,
yep.
Bloem test match.
Bloemfontein, yeah.
Going on to be selected for the World Cup and going to the World Cup thinking he'll play against Tonga and Romania and not many more matches. And then Malcolm went down and the plan was for Bongi to go 80-80-80 in the quarter semis and final. And then in the final, I mean, what, second minute or first minute?
Third minute, I think.
Goes down. And I mean, just on Bongi, that guy, look, he's not the most skillful hooker in the world or the fastest hooker, but that guy is probably one of the hardest men in world rugby. And he will carry with his head into a wall, and he just loves scrumming, and he hates losing. He hates going back in a scrum, he almost never does. So he's massive for us in that regard, in the scrum department, all over the field as well. But especially scrumming, and when he went down, it was, I think, maybe a bit of panic under the coaches and some of the players. I don't know if I can call it panic, but now Dion must step in. He actually came as a flanker, and now he must play 77 minutes in a World Cup final against the All Blacks. And yeah, just what he did and how he stood his man and actually came on and performed. You won't get a better story than that, I think, in rugby.
Like I was saying, Vinny, it's the hardest position because it's so specialist. You're in the middle of the scrum, you've got to throw the ball in. He's 43. He's been at the arse under France. Yeah. Mega, hey?
Yeah. Yeah, it's massive. But again, back to how we train, you know, we said, listen, that this might be a possibility. And of course, when things happened, we threw him into the deep end. And like I said, none better guys to work with is Bongi, of course, opposite him. But having Kitsi, France, Ox and those guys next to him, it just makes his life a bit easier as well. But yeah, massive, unbelievable story. Played a massive game in the final and stepping up like that. I know in the documentary they said he had a shoulder injury as well. I can actually remember that. Just playing that type of performance in a final was unbelievable to watch.
I actually remember, he made his debut against Wales, and then the next week we played them again in Cape Town, and then that night we normally have our initiation. And he actually, after his initiation, I think it was 35, 36, he actually cried because what it meant to him.
Oh,
because he waited for how many years, and he finally got his shot, and he was the proudest man in South Africa, just getting his cap at last, and then going on a year and a half later and playing in a World Cup final and winning, playing 77 minutes. I mean, it's the best story.
Eben, trust me when I say this. A few of the Welsh boys gave him an initiation on Saturday night in Cape Town after the third test. I can promise you that. We made sure we had a good drink for him on Saturday night for him.
What does initiation look like, Eben?
It's quite a sacred thing. You do a couple of dance or singing and stuff, and then it goes into a bit more intense things.
Come on then. Can you share or not, or is it private? You don't have to. Oh, I love
private,
that.
Yeah.
Too loose.
What was your initiation?
Singing a song and having a drink with everyone in the team. Flaming okay. Sambucas.
I was a bit more physical.
Yeah, I bet it is. It's a bit more physical. Oh my goodness me.
I was just going to ask the question, obviously with Sia being based in Paris, the Springbok captaincy sort of up for grabs a little bit. Is that, first of all, Eben, you're probably the name that everyone's talking about, one of the most experienced, well, the most experienced guy in the team now. Is that something that you would relish and want? And also to me, from personal experience, it looks as if your team is just stacked from your front row to your second row to your back row to your 9 and 10 to your 15, just full of leaders. So does it almost matter who is captain?
Yeah, I think whoever is captain, our things won't change. Our processes won't change that much. Like when Sias was captain, you get a guy on the field who will speak to the ref about lineouts, or a guy, if we get together, he speaks about whether our physicality is up to standard or whether our work rate is up to standard. So I think that will stay the same. If I get an opportunity, it will be wonderful. If I don't get the opportunity, also wonderful. As long as I'm hopefully a part of the team. And I know whoever is captain, the other leaders in the team will support that guy. And I mean, we'll always be the biggest honour in South African rugby to be captain of the Springboks. But yeah, obviously not a big train smash if I'm not. I think there's some great candidates out there. And I mean, Siya can still be captain. He's playing good rugby in France and I think he'll always be a part of the squad and would love for him to still be captain. But I mean, that's up to the coaching staff. Whoever they pick, all the other leaders will back that guy.
Again, in the dock, Eben always has final say though at the end, you know, before they break. So the final words in the huddle, then break. That was like me. That's what I used to do. No one was listening. Everyone's laughing, aren't they, Vinny? I'm just shouting.
Are you quite physical as well when you were playing?
Thanks,
player?
Mate. Yeah. Thank you.
And dirty.
Okay. And dirty. Yeah, that was it.
Got a cheap shot from him in one game.
It was an open hand. It was the most powerful open hand.
You bragged about that, Terry's, eh?
I did not brag about you that did. At all. I might have bragged about it when I was 33 and in my prime. Now and very vulnerable. Vinny, what happens after the World Cup now? You're on a WhatsApp chat. Is there an alumni? Do you stay in contact? Is Rassi sending funny pictures or videos or anything?
No, we're actually very chilled. Like, of course, everyone's back to their clubs, but we do still have our WhatsApp groups. But yeah, the thing is, like Edmund said, we didn't have much break. I had a bit longer than the other guys. But yeah, we focus on where we are now for the club, you know. And of course, you get back into the Springbok setup, you have to perform for your clubs. So our main focus is on the games we have now. Yeah, maybe in a few years, in 10 years' time, we'll revisit that WhatsApp groups and then, yeah, have a few drinks.
And what about building, Eben, to the next one? Because I know the South Africans, it's like, it is the four-year build, right? About doing three in a row, chasing the sun three. Maybe a different mindset to other teams. But what is the rebuild? What does it look like for the Springboks?
Yeah, first of all, I think great that Rossi still in charge, or actually back as head coach. It would have been a big thing to lose him. He's massive for us, and the way he understands people and gets people to work together, yeah, he's incredible. And obviously, we've got some new coaching staff, so first thing for them is probably to come in and they will have new ideas. So for us to take that on board and just believe in their plan as well, because they'll have different plans than Felix had or Jogni Noba had. So exciting times actually to work with them. And I think like gets a bit of consistency between the World Cups. Obviously, we all know now 2027 is the next big one. But I mean, you do want to be competitive. You do want to win one or two rugby championships within this phase. We've got Ireland coming up. Obviously, Wales first at Twickenham. But I mean, that Ireland test matches, I think everyone except the Ireland and Springbok players are talking that one up. I mean, everyone's talking about that game. And
do you remember what you said to me after the game? Or not?
I remember what I said to you.
Do you mind sharing it or can I share it?
You can share it.
So we know what had the result of the game. So Ireland played really well, Springboks, a close game. And then there was one of the final plays of the game was Eben, I'm going to say it, got picked up by James Lowe. And that was they made this kind of big thing and the big hurrah. And then Zombie started blasting out. And then the lads are doing like the walk round to thank the crowd after. And then Eben saw him after, said, mate, how was that? And he obviously said it was a tough game. I says, fucking Ireland. He's like, mate, we'll get them back. We'll get them back if they make it. If they make it, and they never did. But now, yeah, they're coming back.
So the thing was, why I said that, so after the game, they were always, you shake the guys' hands, and probably 12 out of the 23, when I shook their hand, they told me, see you guys in the final. And my immediate thought was, because the way the logs worked out, we were going to play France and they were going to play New Zealand. And my immediate thought was, are these guys seriously not even thinking about the All Blacks in a World Cup quarterfinal playing against them? So that remark, what they made, see you guys in the final, I was just like, yo, these guys are making a big mistake to look past probably one of the most dominant teams, or probably the most dominant team in the last 20 to 30 years of Test rugby. And I was just like, surely they can't. I mean, we would never say that too, because we know we are the host nation and we were going to have to pitch up to beat France in their backyard. And yeah, it just felt like they were just so confident saying things like that, see you in the final, when you know you've got the mighty All Blacks coming up in the World Cup quarterfinal.
Did you say anything like when they said that? Did you say, if you get there?
Yeah, I said it in my head, and I remember sharing it. I think Frans Malherbe was with me, and I said, and Lord de Jager, and I said, I don't know if these guys are riding a bit high, because obviously, it's good to be confident, but you can never be arrogant in this game, because you can be here the next week and down.
Can shoot you down.
That's the thing about rugby. You can have the best season You can have one slip up or one missed tackle and a guy puts you on your ass, and that's the beauty of this game. You're never on top forever.
Yeah.
You're just another
number. You boys have done a good job for the last 8 years of being on top, mine. So,
I was going to ask Felix Jones. So he's now with England. No one was speaking about him. He seemed like he had a massive influence, Vinny. From Ireland, he's now with England. But just his delivery and the way that he interacted and the respect that he had off Rassi and Jacques in the meetings, in the big moments, he seems like he was huge.
All the players that played underneath him, he's probably the most hardworking young coach I've ever seen in my life. The hours that he puts in off the field stuff is ridiculous. And his energy on the field when we train, it's something that you feed off, you know. But his knowledge, watching the game, analysing the players, is just ridiculous. And I think it's one of the coaches that we're definitely going to miss, because he played such a big role since he walked in. But yeah, he was one of the reasons why we were successful over the last few years. And me and Edmund actually spoke this week, is like, he was unbelievable coach, and of course we're going to miss him, but we are super excited to get the new coaches in and to feed from them as well and to see what they bring in. But Felix Jones was just unbelievable and a great person as well, great guy off the field as well. But yeah, just credits to his hard working off the field was actually impressive to see.
Were his messages quite simple? Because it looks like it's just very much a huge emphasis on line speed and stopping the ball getting to the edge. I mean, for you boys in the front five, generally the defence is pretty simple. It's about stopping collisions and winning collisions. But it looks from whenever we sort of analysed playing against you guys, it was always the line speed was so fast, but it was the recovery as well. So even if we got the ball over the top against you boys, it would be you, Eben, or Sia, or somebody would be chasing back and sprinting back and recovering. Is that something he put a massive emphasis on, or was it just simple messages the whole time?
Yeah, the thing is, of course, we worked on our line speed, but the thing is, what he drove quite a lot was work rate and effort around the park. Of course, you come off the line, but that's not your job done, you know? When you guys put the ball over or you make a line break, that doesn't mean you've done your job, because you got off the line. And for him, that was one thing that he drove a lot, is how many actions, or your second action, or your action's not done after you've done one good thing, you know? And I think that stood out, what he brought, is just the energy on the field was next level, because he brought that in, he coached it, we trained it. Yeah, so he was always, you've done your job now really well, but that's not done yet, you know. And what you said, when you kicked the ball over, of course our second reaction was, we have to make that tackle, and that's something that he drove quite a lot.
He's watching YouTube clips from like years gone by and picking up like the words that they're using, like noir, black. For those of you who don't know,
you speak French as
fluent,
well.
Fluent. Noir. Is that chocolate?
Yeah.
But like, that's the level of detail. Yeah. And I think people forget as well. They look at the Springboks and they think it's up and down. They think it's scrum. But it's the intricacies. And talking of the intricacies, the final, I know there was only one try. The All Blacks got the one try. But the physicality, but how on song, Eben, both teams were. Like the closed defence, the relationship between Jesse Creel and Kirtley and Cheslin and the cover tackles. You tell me, Eben, what level was that final when you were playing at, like, from all the games you've played? It looked unbelievable. Everyone was talking about the quarterfinals, which were massive.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. And I think especially a backline, a guy like Jesse Creel, I mean, we're talking about unsung heroes. He's actually a guy we can also mention. Lucanio Om was one of the best players in the world, and he got injured, and Jesse was never, I mean, he's got, I think, over 60 test matches for the box, but he was never a guy who became negative or started complaining. He just every week started working hard, and then there was a time for, I mean, how many test matches didn't get picked, but one day he'll just go work harder again, and he'll go work harder. And then eventually he got his chance in the World Cup, and all that hard work showed. And I think that's the mentality we want to put out there for a guy who's not selected, and we try that as well with the Sharks, like, just stay positive. But because when your time comes, then you must perform. Then you've been complaining, well, Jesse hasn't been complaining, but some guys complain, and then they get the shot, and then they don't actually show what they're capable of. And a guy like Jesse, he just kept on working hard, and then at the end of the day, he played a World Cup quarter, semis and final. He was incredible.
Yeah.
In that, on 13 is obviously big if you have a rush defense. 13 is quite a key position. And he was massive in leading that line, connecting with 12 and the wingers, and just comms, and also on attack. He was brilliant for us, putting that putter through in that French game. No, he was massive. And yeah, it was just so intense. As you saw in Chasing the Sun, even Frans Malherbe said he thought it was 5 minutes gone in the one game. It was 22 minutes gone. So no, it was incredible, intense games.
Final question on Jesse. Did he get you all a celebratory Rolex? Because I've heard he's the man to go to for Rolex watches. Is that right in the squad?
He keeps his contacts very close. Yeah, okay,
fair enough.
he probably got one.
We said whatever, because Corey Hill, who plays in Japan, he played it in Canon with him. And he said Jesse Creel's basically dishing out Rolexes as if they're Casio. So all the boys are excited coming to South Africa thinking they're going to pick up a cheap Rolex.
But are they Rolex or Jolex?
It could be Jolex, yeah. Oh, but really? He's supposed to be pretty well connected. So
I feel like I get a Rolex after this, building up in this podcast now. So
I talked him up a storm. Eben, into a bit of business then, because it is game week, semi-final. How are you with all the travel? Because there's a lot of new South African players. Like, we were talking about it actually with the Bulls coming up to Northampton, and then they had a big game at home. So just firstly on that, there's a lot, isn't there, with the URC, and to make it into a semi-final of the Challenge Cup is a big thing for the South African teams.
Yeah, there is much more travel in the past. And I mean, obviously the Bulls got some criticism coming their way. But
what did you think of that?
Look, I think that's Jake's call. I think if you're a head coach, you must be able to select who you want to. I always say in the Champions Cup and actually Challenge Cup, you don't finish top four, you don't have a home semi, the chance of you winning that comp is really low, because then you must go away quarters and then you probably go semi away against Leinster, and then you must play again in Europe against maybe a Toulouse. So it's always going to be difficult. They're lying pretty well in the URC, so they got a lot of criticism coming their way, and maybe a bit unfair. I think I obviously saw some players also, Courtney Laws, mentioning something, and it's a South African way. I don't know why he mentioned the whole of South Africa.
Have you got a message for Courtney?
He surely doesn't know what's going on in South Africa, so you must rather keep his mouth shut.
Yeah.
But for us, on the other hand, we out of the URC. We had a pretty disappointing season so far, and the Challenge Cup is our big redemption. It can put a bit of a silver lining in of our season. But we also know Clermont is also not doing well in the top 14, so they'll also be going for the semi-final massively. So it's two desperate teams, two teams that we saw the game that they played against Star. They're a big team, big back of forward, some unbelievable backs, running backs. It's going to be a tough game, but we obviously know this competition is our way of redeeming our season. And if we don't win it, very terrible season for us. I mean, there's no, you can't sugarcoat it. It's been horrible. But if we do go on and win it, then at least we have some silverware, first South African team to win silverware in Europe, and also spot in next year's Champions Cup. So it's all or nothing for us. But we know they'll be desperate, and each team will always have plans. So we'll never write the team off. But yeah, massive, massive for us.
It is cool that you're in London, though. There's a massive South African contingent, as you all know, Vinny, from being at Sarri's, not just with the players. But
we
like
didn't get loads of fans, though.
Yeah, but it's North London,
okay,
you know.
Hopefully.
The South Africans that live in
South West London.
Yeah, so they've got a bit of money, you know. We want the money, men and women. But there's a big South African contingent in London. You see when the Springboks, obviously, come and play the game against the All Blacks as well before the World Cup. But it'd be cool to get them along to the Stoop as well, to come and watch you lads. All the superstars. But is Bongi wheeling himself out? Well, we'll say he is. You don't need to. You don't need to say. No, we're just trying to sell it to say that everyone's playing.
I think it's just unbelievable to have the game at the Stoop. Like you said, there's loads of South Africans there, and whoever's listening, Eben is in London, so hopefully he gets the nod from the coach. But I think we'll definitely get a few supporters. It is our home semi-final as well, so it would be great if the people or South Africans and anyone who just loves South Africa as a country just come out and support us, because we know how difficult it is to play in France with their home crowd. So hopefully we can have that year as well, and just in the favour of us, you know. But yeah, it'll be great to see a few South Africans, maybe a few Afrikaans people speaking next to the field as well.
Yeah. What about the Sharks going forward, Vinny? Like Eben said, it's been a tough season, but like notoriously, historically, over years gone by, a lot of the super teams are quite iconic. But I know like Marco, the owner, and the marketing team, like they understand the kind of direction that rugby needs to go, that you need to go to, where you've got superstars in your team. now playing, but just give us an idea of where you are at with the squad and the ambitions going forward.
Yeah, the thing is, like Edmund said, we didn't have a great start, but we've got unbelievable players there, youngsters, new signings coming to the club, you know, and for us, we want to be the best team in South Africa or the best team in the URC or in Europe, you know. For us, that is our goals. Unfortunately, we couldn't reach it this year, but we're starting to rebuild for the mistakes we made in the beginning of the season. So I think there's exciting times coming, you know. We looked at our last five games, you saw that we're heading to the right direction. And like I said, with the new signings coming to the club, people actually want to come to the Sharks. That's always nice to see. But then again, the youngsters coming through as well, playing with kids that's 21 years old, you know, which are already superstars and could potentially become Springbok soon, you know. For me, that is exciting, sitting on the other side of the fence now, being a bit older, but to see the energy the young kids have and the desire for them to be successful, and they're proud to wear the Sharks badge, and for me, that's the most exciting thing.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. 'Tis crunchy yet soft. 'Tis filling yet has a hole. 'Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's. Huzzah! A toast to breakfast.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
Yeah. Give us maybe one or two names, someone who's 20, 21, maybe, which the listeners or people in the UK wouldn't be overly familiar with, who you think is going to be tearing up the URC next year, maybe getting into that Springbok camp. Give us a couple of names.
Yeah, the thing is, it's always difficult to give out a few names, but I mean, if I look at the back line, Ethan Hooker, I think he's 21 years old, unbelievable player. Then you get people, a guy in Eben's position, Cornet Roll, he's a youngster as well, also early 20s, Emil van Heerden, rock hard lock as well, very built like Franco Mostert.
I thought you pointed me
there. I thought you were going to say Jim Hamilton.
No, yeah. he pointed in my direction, arms, yeah. Strong back.
Yeah, but I mean, all of them, we've got exciting young props. The thing is, our squad is just full of talent, you know. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see where they're going, because I can see the hard work they're putting in now from a young age, where if I look back at my younger age, I didn't put in that much effort and all that hard work. And to see young kids doing that today, it's just...
Just to mention one more young guy, I think a guy like Siya Masuku.
Oh, yeah.
Altena, he's been man of the match for the last three games. He's been quite impressive coming into the... I think he changed our attack quite a bit as well. But yeah, he's been impressive.
What do you look for, Eben, in a player, these young lads coming through? Like, what are the expectations from experienced Springboks like you?
I think that never say die attitude and almost that warrior mindset, that you don't stand back. Obviously, Sia's not the biggest guy, but you can see him flying into tackles, and that's what you want to see in a player. Same with Ethan. The guys, they put their bodies on the line, and that's what is expected of you, but not all the players always do it on the field. And if you want to play at the national level, I think that's a big thing. Rossi and the coaches look at is whether you put your body on the line and whether you'll be able to, if you weigh 80 kgs, you'll be able to stop a lock or a prop that's 140 kgs. If Winnie Antonio runs at you, if you're willing to put your body in front of him. And yeah, I think that's a big thing. That's, I think, what these youngsters in our team have.
The meaning of playing for the Springboks and playing rugby. You've played so many caps, back-to-back World Cups. it's so cool that it gets documented and that we get to see it. People in the UK are going to get to see it soon enough. They're working through a licensing kind of agreement, either with Rugby Pass TV or with one of the TV channels or Prime Video or whatever it is. But just give us an idea of the meaning of playing for the Springboks.
Yeah, I've said this a couple of times. I think the day I won't be selected for the box, it will hurt. That's the reason why I play rugby, to try and perform for my club week in, week out, to eventually, when the international season comes, to be selected and obviously to perform on that level. I want to be playing for the box as long as possible. Yeah, it's been a dream of mine since I was young. I sometimes just lie by myself and think, how did this all happen? Like, how was I able to be a part of two winning World Cup squads and be a part of this team for such a long time? And it sometimes do feel unreal. And it's incredible to represent that jersey. And people ask me also, how do you stay motivated? For me, when you put that green jersey of your head, you don't need any more motivation. Mm. Doesn't matter if you play against India or the All Blacks.
Scored a hat-trick against India, just so you know.
Yeah, just didn't want to mention a team that plays rugby. So India probably don't have the best rugby team.
No, they're all right. Yeah, we beat them 138-0. They're all right.
But for me, it's people always ask also, how do you get up for smaller games? It's not about that. It's about representing South Africa and putting that jersey that means so much to you, not disrespecting that jersey, like leaving it in a better place than you found it.
Mm-hmm. Follow that, Vinny.
It's difficult. Yeah, as a kid, of course, you dream, you watch, or you first watch and then you dream, you know. For me, my route was also always a little bit different. So for me, it's the proudest moment in my rugby career, is putting on the jersey. I was in the setup, moved to Sarries, and then that part where Eben said, when the Springbok jersey gets, or you don't play for them anymore, that's going to be the toughest thing for him. And I've experienced that and played a few caps, moved to Sarries, and then the rule came in, you know, that I couldn't play. And for me, that was tough, you know. You work unbelievably hard at your club to get that reward, but it's not really a reward that's the only reason why you play for it. But the thing is, because it was a dream of mine, that is the motivation. Every time I run into the field, it's like, as a kid, as a young kid, that was all I wanted to do. And not to work every day as hard as I can, I'll just let myself down, you know. And what Eben said, putting on that jersey is representing not only you, your family, but it's 60-odd million people in South Africa. And for me, that is the greatest achievement and proudest moment I can have.
So cool.
Amazing. Thank you for joining us, lads.
Yeah.
Thank you for breaking my heart in 2019 as well. So really, really, really grateful for that one.
Yeah, it's been awesome. So we're going to just promo the game at the weekend, if we may. So it's the Challenge Cup semi-final, as we know. Fully loaded. That's what's written here. So that means Bongi and Mbanambi's definitely playing if you're fully loaded. But the Hollywood Bet Sharks, you're up against Clermont, who have got deep history, Vinny, as we know, in Europe, in the competition. Eben, you're starting. Okay, tick, you're down on the list. Yeah, Vinny, you're in as well. Mate, you're starting.
Really?
Yeah, you are now. You are now. Lekanyam as well. I said Lekanyam, right? Is that right? Lekanyam, he's starting. Bongi Mbanambi, he's starting. Mazola Mapimpi, he's in. You're all in. You're fully loaded. You've got some quality players. So it's going to be awesome to watch you on show. Basically, it's Springboks in cool black jerseys, so with Sharks on. But the game's at Twickenham Stoop. You know that?
I love the place.
Yeah, love that place. We know we don't. Yeah. The Saracens, Harlequins.
Love that place,
I know. Yeah. But it's the 4th of May, so this Saturday. Kickoff's 12:30, Rob. We're going as super fans if you can get a babysitter. But you can get your tickets on eticketing.co.uk/Harlequins. And we're going to be there fully loaded with a Guinness in hand. I don't know where you'll be, Biggs, but we'll have a couple for you as well.
Thanks, Jim. I'm actually flying back to the UK to fly back with my wife and
kids, that's fine. So I'll be there waving with my Hollywood Bet Sharks on.
You make sure you enjoy yourself, Jim.
I played for the Talent 21s. Wicked, lads. Thank you so much.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you, guys. Thanks.
How good, Biggs, having them in the studio.
So good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So good. So insightful. It wasn't like they sort of shied up or sort of tensed up. It was just open and honest.
That's what happens in the studio.
That's what it is.
So much better.
It's like a magical place in your gym.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm, you know, riding them, like all over them. But it's true.
I think as well, them coming in, being as honest and open with us as possible. And I just, like I said, it was just a brilliant hour, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. And that's, if you're a South African fan, get down to the game. If you're a rugby fan, basically, if you're a rugby fan.
You look at the team they've got, and that's what Eben was saying, wasn't it? How much of a poor season it's been for them with the players they've got. And admittedly, they haven't had a chance to play together all that often. But
and it's a World Cup, yeah.
Exactly.
As well.
But exactly what you said, Jim. I think if anybody's got a spare afternoon on Saturday, get down to the Stoop and see two teams going absolutely at it. It should be an absolute cracker.
Yeah, so I'll redo it. If you want tickets, go to e-ticketing, so eticketing.co.uk/Harlequins with an S. And you can get tickets to watch the Hollywood Bet Sharks versus Clermont. 12:30 at the Stoop. I'll be there.
Who do you think?
Sharks by 30.
Sharks.
No,
we're big Sharks supporters.
I always
this
have been. I have got my shirt. I might even wear my shirt.
Yeah,
I will.
Nice.
Right. Should we get into a bit of business?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. There's obviously loads of rugby, but let's have a look at some of the headlines. Let's start with your former team, Northampton versus Harlequins at Twickenham. Loads of talking points out of that. Let's just go. No, let's talk about how good the game was first, because we were talking about the Bath Saris game and the contrast of that. And Saris played the perfect game against Bath on Friday night at the Rec to win that game. But the contrast between the two games was just unrecognisable.
Yeah, the two teams on Saturday played the game in such a positive manner, didn't they? And there's nothing. I've got no problem with how certain teams play different ways. Bath and Saris are going to play to their strengths. Northampton and Quins play to their strengths. But what it did for the game on Saturday, with a big crowd at Twickenham, great weather, two teams just full of confidence, full of energy, and just it was such a good spectacle. I thought both teams had played really, really well, actually. I actually thought Northampton's defence was really good in that first half. A couple of missed tackles, a couple of misreads, and you give this Quins team an inch and they'll take it. And I just thought the whole spectacle was a brilliant spectacle. I thought both teams had attacking intent. I thought Finn Smith and Marcus Smith, actually, for a big build-up, actually probably had quite quiet games, and it was the players around that were just full of energy. I think there was one passage where it was nearly 5 minutes of ball in play without the ball going off or a scrum or a line out. So a brilliant game of rugby and probably just about the right result. I thought Northampton were lucky not to pick up a second point at the end, but Quins were good value for the win, I thought.
Considering there's a semi-final in the Champions Cup, you know, like they could have taken the foot off the accelerator.
That game is probably the last thing that both teams wanted
100%.
The week before you go away to Leinster and away to Toulouse. An exhausting 80-minute performance where you're fighting tooth and nail, and the way that the two teams played exhausting rugby is probably the last thing you want. But, you know, that's what it is at this time of year. If you're in semi-finals and you're competing for top four places, there's big games every week, and that's what Quins and Saints have got this weekend. I mean, they've got two of the toughest challenges in European rugby, haven't they? Going to Toulouse, going to Leinster to try and win a European semi-final. It's a huge, huge task. But I think both teams have got the ability to cause upsets. There's no doubt that Toulouse and Leinster will start as favourites. Absolutely no doubt. But the ability and the amount of game changers, game breakers, game winners in both those teams for Quins and Saints gives them a shout. And I think it'll be really tight in both games. I still fancy Leinster and I still fancy Toulouse just. But I really, really fancy both teams to push them all away.
Yeah, I'm going to say it feels like it is hard to call. And maybe that's because they are the underdogs going into the game. So there's no expectation. And that's where Quins seem to operate at their very best, like as we saw. Like if you go over to Bordeaux with that team, I know they were missing Penaud and they were missing Jalibert as well, but that's Bordeaux. Like they put 50-odd points on Saracens a couple of times.
They've got freedom, haven't they? They almost went to Bordeaux with nobody expecting them to win. And that's, like you said, Jim, that's when Quins just free up, play some rugby, move the ball around, shift the point of contact. I thought Dom Brandt, was absolutely magnificent on the weekend. His offloads, his winning the collisions, I just thought he was absolutely everywhere on the weekend. So they're going to need their 8, 9 and 10 to play well, as they do most week, Quins, to get a result. But I do fancy that when the shackles come off, and Toulouse are a brilliant, brilliant team, but they give you opportunities. So Toulouse give you opportunities to score tries. I mean, admittedly, they've got very good players who can score lots of points as well. But they give you opportunities, and a team like Quins, all of a sudden you get a score early doors, maybe edge ahead, and the game becomes very different. The other hand, in Dublin on Saturday evening, I think you look at the last 2 weeks of the URC from Leinster. Leinster basically have sent nobody over to South Africa. I think they've almost used these 2 weeks as a training camp for the Northampton game. And I think they've been so desperate to win this Champions Cup. They've brought Jack Niemeyer in for that, I think, to get them over the line. They've got the hoodoo off their back against La Rochelle.
Because remember, they smashed La Rochelle as well.
Yeah, it was a convincing win. And they look like this year is the only thing they care about is winning that European Cup. The two defeats to La Rochelle the last 2 years have hurt them. And it looks as if, you know, the Leinster team were in South Africa, but mentally they were in Croke Park. And I think that's the biggest problem that Northampton will have, is that their desire and their want, on top of being a fantastic rugby team, will just see them over the line. But I think, again, you've got a team of brilliant young players in Northampton who've got no fear. And that's what's put them in the position. We keep writing them off. We keep thinking, well, they're playing Saris this week, they'll probably slip up. They're playing Munster this week, they may slip up. They're playing whoever it is. But they just keep winning and winning and playing well. And this team is so full of confidence that they've got the ability. I think if anybody's got the ability to cause an upset, it's them this weekend. And they're full of brilliant players.
Right. We spoke high. We have to go a little bit low. You're not on social media, Biggs, but it blew up over the weekend. I wasn't going to engage with it, but I thought, fuck it, I will do. So Carl Dixon refereeing Harlequins, his former team, Northampton, and there was a couple of big decisions, which I thought he got right. And I put it out there on social media and people are disagreeing, and we'll go into more specifics about it. But like Austin Healy disagrees with me, flats on commentary with Nick Mullins and everyone else, Ben Kay, pitch side, are all saying that the wrong decision was made. It should, you know, Danny Kerr should have got a second yellow for diving over the ruck onto Alex Mitchell, and Carl Dixon had his hand ready in his pocket and he didn't give it.
Danny Kerr's actions didn't look good.
No.
From a clear line break, Saints have quick ball there, they probably score. So has Alex Mitchell picked up the ball? It's not an easy call. It's not an easy call, I'll say that, but for me, it looked like a penalty, I've got to be honest. And I think the reaction of him to go to his pocket, first of all, probably doesn't help Carl Dixon's case in this. I think Danny Kerr's reaction after the game and things probably, and his smile coming off, probably looked as if he got away with one a little bit.
I think, and I don't know this for sure, and whether or not this is right or wrong, okay? Carl Dixon's played the game, regardless if he's been at Quinn's or not, okay? Take that out of it. He knows. I don't know what would happen, whether it would be a red card, therefore you get a game ban. I don't know how that works. I don't know if he knows, I don't know if anyone knows. But maybe in that moment he's thinking, if he gives a penalty, it's a yellow card because of what you've just said. It's a line break. Was that enough to warrant a red card? I know it's a crazy thing to say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. But he's unlucky on his first yellow, isn't he? You know, in terms of, obviously...
He is unlucky.
He's unlucky, to be fair, going on Courtney Laws head on head.
And that's the
difference in size, you know?
The difference in size with that. And sorry just to cut you off, but as in the indiscrepancies over the weekend, like Mike Brown, double yellow, Maratoji's was probably the worst one, gets a yellow, but Mike Brown, double yellow, gets red carded, Leicester 19-0 up, end up losing the game at home and they're out. So chaos. But yeah, but on the Danny Kerr one, because that's the one that's doing the rounds, and people are so negative on they get all aggressive. When they're coming back, it's like, fuck, I ain't that bothered. It's a 50-50. You might even say 51-49 in favour of it should have been a penalty. But it's not clear as day.
I was just about to say, Jim, the fact that everybody's having the discussions on it after seeing countless replays probably leans itself to say that it's not as clear cut as it probably looked at Saturday at 4 o'clock or whatever it was. But for me, it didn't. The actions didn't look good. And I think the way I look at it, if he'd have got Simbin for that, would anybody have and sent off and for a second yellow, forget about the first yellow, would anybody have complained?
No.
And I don't think they would have. I think they would have said it's a thing. The slight issue I had in the game with the officiating was Northampton Saints' first try. The pass is, I mean, it's 3 or 4 yards forward. Clear forward pass. But the TMO doesn't come in for that. But then Northampton Saints, the one they score right on half time, where it's 50-50 again, whether has Alex Mitchell knocked it on, has it come off his hands? It probably does. He probably flicks his fingertips.
But it
doesn't affect anything. And the TMO feels the need to come in for that one. So then you just think, well, if he's not going to come in for that, has he just come in to find something wrong because he's missed the earlier one? That's the one that for me it was quite hard to sort of look past. But I think for me that if Danny Kerr got given a second yellow card for those actions, I don't think anybody, we're not sitting here to this evening discussing it, in my opinion. It's that. And I think the fact that it wasn't given is more of a story perhaps than if it had been given. The actions didn't look good from my view. I also just can't believe, isn't it 18 yellow cards he's had in his Prem career, which is for a number nine is a huge number, isn't it? Fair play to him.
He gets away with it with a smile, though, doesn't he?
Absolutely.
Let's have a look what else is happening in the world of Northern Hemisphere ruggers. Munster, going well. Back-to-back wins in South Africa, which isn't easy. We forget, I don't know if you forget, I kind of do, champions of the URC.
Yep, you know champions. I mean? Had to go away from home, was it? Three or four times yep. to win it last year. They've two brilliant victories in South Africa, keeps them in the hunt. And they'll be full of confidence coming back home. A week off this week to recoup after being in South Africa for 2 weeks. And they'll fancy their chances. They're playing with some confidence.
Yeah, loads of injuries throughout the season and the right time. Graham O'Rountree, RG Snyman is back. Started at the weekend. They're making a push for it.
Graham O'Rountree, I like that one, Jim.
Graham O'Rountree, see what we've done there. Glasgow,
top of the log.
I was going to say the Leinster, top of the URC versus Northampton, top of the Prem, but it's not.
Isn't it funny that we're just so used to saying Leinster, top of the URC? It's just like it rolls off the tongue, isn't it?
And that's what I mean. Do Glasgow win the URC? I don't know. Right, I can't turn around and say that I think they can beat Leinster, for example.
Do Glasgow win the URC, or do they have a better chance of winning the URC if Leinster win this weekend?
Yes, they do.
I think so as well.
That isn't the great thing, is it, around the URC? Like, let's be honest, but it doesn't matter. Let's stay positive. Yep. But Glasgow, even if they don't win the URC, okay, and say Leinster go on to win it, all right, just because they're star-studded and probably favourites and currently second, this has still been a good season for Glasgow. No one's really speaking about them. Like Franco Smith, well-coached, good players, in their prime. Yeah, I'm pumped. Under the radar. It has been under the radar
because, like I said, when I looked at the table, I didn't realise that they were 4 points clear of Leinster now. So they've put some really good performances together, and they've picked up a lot of bonus point wins as well. You know, their maul, as we know, is always very good. I think they scored a couple of tries from a maul on the weekend again. They'll be very difficult to beat, certainly if they can get themselves a home playoff game. That'll make things a lot easier for them. But like I said, they've gone under the radar. They've just quietly gone about their business. Not the flashiest of squads, not the most star-studded of squads, but a team of grafters. And I think, though, the big question will come, and I actually saw a couple of the articles saying that, I think George Horn came out and said it's about time that, you know, Glasgow and Scotland start to sort of really put some trophies and really 100%. Go that next step. And I think that was quite refreshing for me to hear that, because I think it's easy for them to say, look, we've done okay, we're above Leinster in the league, et cetera, but ultimately in the league format as it is, it's about winning big knockout matches, and Glasgow have got to go and produce that. But fair play to them, top of the log. Flying at the minute.
Yeah, just to name drop a few, like Carl Steyn, captain on the wing, South African but Scottish. Do I mean, fantastic player. Sione Tupolotu as well. Everyone was talking about him during the Six Nations.
He's made a big difference to them coming back, and I think he would have made a big difference to Scotland in towards 100%. The end of that Six Nations.
Like some quality players like Carl Rowe, George Horn on the bench against Zebra, but he's been brilliant. Jamie Dobby as well. Stafford McDowell. Like, you actually start name dropping the players, you're thinking actually a really settled squad under Franco Smith, under the radar. So it's been a success regardless of how it unfolds. So big shout out to Glasgow.
Yep.
Right, some other stuff we'll fire through. Bristol, how the smokes. 19-0. Leicester are winning. 19-0 with 60-odd minutes gone. Yes, there's a red card, double yellow to Mike Brown. My best mate coach is Leicester, so I need to be careful, Deeks, in what they say.
It's funny, isn't it? When the game, Bristol have come off the back of winning their last five or six games, and almost when you're in that form, you almost forget how to lose.
Mm.
And even if you don't play particularly well, which Bristol didn't, and Leicester, to be fair, strangled the game, and probably, you know, if you're 19-0 up with whatever, was it 15 minutes to go or whatever it was, you know, you can only look at yourselves for losing that rather than the other team winning it. But fair play to Bristol. They keep themselves alive.
Mate, and from nine.
Yeah.
8 wins from 9. 6 wins in a row.
And that is going to set up one hell of a game for, I think they play Quins on the last day of the season.
Yeah.
So that could be a playoff decider. So fair play to them. I think Leicester looked like a team which, even though they were solid and they did enough, they certainly looked a team at the end which are looking for the end of the season and looking to try and get a few players on the beach and recoup ready for next year, I'd say. They look they look pretty disappointed with letting that slip at the end.
That's it. It's over for them. But big shout out to Max Lahiff as well. 2 tries.
He is in some nick as well.
Oh, my gosh. He, you know what? He did some stuff for Rugby Pass. He did this thing down in Italy, some kind of mad barbarian gladiatorial thing. He's a very talented guy.
Yeah.
On the pitch, off the pitch. Quirky.
Yeah.
Ripped to shreds. You know when he re-signed? I don't know, you're not on social media, so no. You might not see it. So Bristol announced that he's re-signed, and it's him doing like a slow skipping rope, doing a voiceover. He fucking looks $1 million.
Yeah. Like, well, a god. I can see that. Yeah. You can see. He looked, a couple of tries for him, so nearly got a hat-trick as well. He was close to getting a hat-trick as well. So big shout-out to him. Big shout-out to Bristol Bears. Great win.
Yeah, right. Last one we'll do. Edinburgh, big win down in Cardiff. But why I say that is the big news out of Cardiff. Ellis Jenkins retiring. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, he's clearly had his injury issues over the last few years. And I think probably the toll has probably just taken... It's just taken a bit too much on him. Brilliant player on his day. Just probably really unlucky to have been around in an era where there's been so many good sevens in Wales in terms of your Warburtons, your Tippericks, your Jack Morgans, your Tommy Reffles. So you're probably thinking if one or two of them aren't around, he probably goes on and has 50 caps because, you know, brilliant for Cardiff, brilliant over the ball, unlucky with injuries. But yeah, big news. And like I said, we wish him all the best. But a big win for Edinburgh.
Big win for Edinburgh.
Big win for Edinburgh.
Big win for Edinburgh. Keeps us, hashtag always, in the hunt. I think we've got Zebra next week. I'm doing a touch tournament, like a walking touch thing before the game.
There you are, Jim.
I don't know. It's got zero reference for this. But anyway, that's what's been happening in the Prem and the URC. Let's have a look at some other stuff, Biggs, from around the world of rugby. What's a big one for you, Rob?
Oh, the Red Roses were good at the weekend, weren't they?
Yeah. I saw the post being liked. We don't do much on women's rugby, but big shout out to the Red Roses.
Yeah.
They're easy street. Am I being harsh in saying that or not? Like,
they look comfortable in every game, didn't they?
There you go. That's the thing. If they're going to sell it properly, and this comes down to investment, they need competition. You know what I mean? You need proper.
I think the World Cup, isn't it? World Cup next year is the big one.
Yeah.
They're going to target that, I think. Aren't they? So, I mean, like Wales played in front of, I think it was just under 10,000 people at the Principality Stadium, which is a tough sell, isn't it? And I think there needs to be a fair bit more investment from that side of things to challenge the likes of England, because it looks as if it's just too easy for them at the minute.
That's what I mean. Big shout out.
Congratulations to them. Huge congratulations.
And the Irish women as well. They've qualified for World Cup 25 in England.
What about the Bulls?
We called it last week, didn't we? We said it was going to be hard for the Ospreys.
They looked a different team, the Bulls, this weekend, didn't they?
They've been listening to the podcast, haven't they?
We give them some players. We can only apologise to the Ospreys fans and players for our actions last week. But they looked really good. They looked strong. They looked aggressive. It was never really a contest. And the Ospreys, that defeat actually puts a real dent in the Ospreys' playoff positions because Edinburgh
beat Cardiff,
Connacht won. So they're in a bit of trouble now. But the Bulls looked really good. Home at Pretoria, Loftus-Versfeld, always difficult to challenge them. And the Ospreys face a bit of an uphill battle now, but the Bulls were exceptional, to be fair.
Let's have a look at France, Biggs. Give us a lay of the land in France. So, like, who's the relegation battle? Montpellier back in after getting beat by Perpignan?
Lay of the land is, Oyonnax actually had a really good win, but I think they're just a little bit too far behind, so I think they're probably down already. Fair bit to do there. Montpellier played Perpignan in Montpellier this weekend and lost at home. Perpignan up to sixth in the table.
Really?
They dropped back up to sixth, I think they are now. So they've had a brilliant, Franck Azema doing a brilliant job, coached at Toulon last year, so he deserves a big shout out. Bordeaux, their backline with Moafana, Luku, Jalibert, Bielbarre.
There's a little bit of a French twang there as well.
Bielbarre. They look, I mean, when they've got their full side out, they look brilliant. I think it was Bayonne's first loss at home in Bayonne for 27 matches, something like that. It's a long way. It's been a long time since they lost at home in Bayonne. So a big shout out to Bordeaux for probably the win of the weekend, I would say.
There we go. Who's likely to go down then? Who are the teams?
I would say at the minute, Montpellier look as if they're going to be battling in that 13th place playoff with the Pro de Deux. Van are looking good. Provence are looking good in Pro de Deux. So I'd imagine it's probably going to be one of those teams. And it's going to be tough for Montpellier. Montpellier on paper, though, they're a stacked team.
Mental.
Reinhardt, Carbonell, Surfontaine, Vincent, Simmons at eight, Tolofua, Hooker. I mean, it's an incredible team they've put together there. And for them to be in 13th is really tough. The Perpignan fans, I don't know if you saw any of the game, but the Perpignan fans at the end of the match were incredible. Basically packed out one side of the stand and they're enjoying some really good time. But I would say that Montpellier look as if it's going to be tough. They've got some tough fixtures. They've got to go to Cast. They've got to go to Clermont, I think. And it's going to be some tough games for them to get some points from.
It's all right, though. They've got Billy Vunipola is going to be coming. He can take a taser. Do you know what I mean? So hard as nails. Any man that can take a taser can take you out of Pro D2 if they go
down. I think he took his first one to the wallet. His wallet was his wallet was big enough and heavy enough to absorb the blow. So I think he was all right.
We are recording as there's more news coming out. And yeah, if you don't laugh at Billy, you cry. But fucking, hey, all I know is don't fight on the continent. I've told this story before, Biggs, but we had a fight in Barcelona. I say we had a fight. The Kovskins basically took the tip or took the money. So we went out for drinks, paid for the drinks, left the money on the table. Kovskin Jace like just saw the money, put it in his pocket. We're outside, come on, Sava, on the cigarettes. And I'm just looking at the door.
Is that what they speak in Barcelona?
They do when you bollocks.
Okay.
And then the lads have come down the stairs and Jace is there and it's like this kerfuffle. Next thing, he's been roundhouse kicked in the face. I was like, what the fuck? And then FNL Mike comes down, bang, roundhouse kicked in the face. Don't fight on the continent. Unless you can take a taser, like Billy V. I'll tell you one thing I did see. Tim Ryan, hat-trick on debut for the Queensland Reds. Unbelievable.
I think it was his debut start, wasn't it? Actually, I'm
all right,
sure.
Rob. All right, Rob. No, keep that. It's fine. Debut, whatever, or debut, yeah. Whatever it was. He scored a hat-trick. Unbelievable. Third try was immense. I don't watch... Do you watch much Super Rugby? It's on Friday morning,
isn't
it?
I haven't seen
a
huge amount,
time.
Yeah. I've normally got, like, Peppa Pig and... Oh. The Lion Guard and stuff like that going on at the minute at that time in the morning on a Friday and Saturday. So I don't get a chance to watch a huge amount, but big shout out for Tim Ryan.
Yeah, Tim Ryan, hat trick. And then we'll stick with Super Rugby. Crusaders humped Melbourne 39-0.
Andy Rowe will be happy.
He will be happy. I spoke to him last week.
Did you?
Yeah.
Is he all right?
He seems all right. So he's happy.
Who cares?
That was it. That was it.
that's a big win for the Crusaders. That gives them half an outside chance of, even after the season they've had, of still sort of qualifying. I think Lee Halfpenny may be coming back fit next week or the week after as well to play for them eventually. So after getting there for a few months, injuring his shoulder, so be great to see him in a Crusader shirt and push for a playoff place.
Yeah. Should we be negative? Some red cards or not?
There was a few on the weekend, Jim, wasn't there?
Go on, you do it. You be negative, then you can give a few. Yeah,
that sums me up, I think. Yeah. Ben Carter, red card for a high tackle on the weekend against Connaught. Game was at 27-all.
Yeah.
Went on to lose 34-27 from a driving maul try, so that will hurt him quite badly. Cast had a couple of reds in their defeat to Oyonnax at home. Again, pretty costly. I think the first one was in within 20 minutes. So just goes to show, discipline very, very important at this level.
Rob, give us the name of the two cast red cards, please. They're there in the notes.
Levan Chilichava.
Chilichava, very good.
That F I got for GCSE French paying off. And Santiago Arata.
Sounds good to me.
I'd go more Santiago, but it's not. You're right, you've said it phonetically.
There you go.
Santiago Arata. But yeah, that's a wrap.
Should we finish with some shout-outs?
Let's finish off with some shout-outs. Let's do it. Go on, Biggs, you go first.
Okay, so we got Tuesday, 30th of April, is a massive day for Market Harbour at RUFC, as both the senior team and the Colts will play in their County Cup finals, which is a cup doubleheader at Leicester Tigers, Welford Road Stadium. Good luck, lads.
Good luck. Got another massive shout-out to our mates who play for the Army Masters team as they take on the Navy Mariners.
Mariners.
Oh, shit. Well, anyway, that's on Friday at Richmond RFC. It's free entry, so get done and support the lads. Come on, the Army.
And a big shout out for the Cleveland Cougars, who are a self-described socially elite invitational sevens team.
All right, talk yourselves up, jeez. Yeah.
We could get an invite there, Jim. Yeah. They must be quite good because they're some of Rob's mates, but they never ask him to play. Anyway, they've got an exciting summer coming up with 8 tournaments. So if you see them, cheer on the boys from up north.
All right, who are they then, Rob? Are they...
Just some lads from the club that play for the first team, so I don't really know them.
So they've named themselves the Cougars?
Yeah.
Lads.
Banter.
Right, finally, Jack's been in touch and he's asked if we can give a shout out for his coach, Graham Loughran, who's retiring after 19 years, that's commitment, at Thames RFC in Essex. A Goliath example of a dedicated club man. He bows out after donning the boots for the final 20s last game as first team coach. So congratulations, Graham. Enjoy putting your feet up on a Saturday from now on, mate, and maybe watching from the touchline with a beer in hand. Right, thanks, Biggs.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Need that interaction. We're coming back. But thank you to all the listeners. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube, TikTok. Well, that's a new one. We're pushing the TikTok,
yeah,
are we now, Rob?
The TikTok, yeah.
You are. All right. Check us out on TikTok. Instagram, of course, where we love a collab on there, don't we?
We do.
We bloody love a collab. Mm. But mostly, importantly, make sure that you subscribed on Spotify. Rugby Spod.
Rugby Spod, 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 Spod.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.